Be reading from Book of Romans, passages in chapters 12 and 13. I'm going to begin with chapter 12, verse 17. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give peace to wrath, for it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authorities? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but because of conscience's sake. For because of this you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, custom to whom customs, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor.
As Jason said this morning at the second service, we preachers don't know when to sit down. We normally have the reading earlier, and I just wasn't thinking. Normally, I take off preaching, and I knew I'd keep on till I made a mistake. Next Sunday night, after services, it's when we're having the Finger Food Fellowship and inviting the Christian Training Series people that are already here to be our guests. You know, we haven't had a Finger Food Fellowship in about 2 weeks. And we really need to have one. So let me encourage you, you know, especially in the summertime when our group's smaller, let me encourage as many of you as can to come. Just bring a little extra. We'll have several of the CTS people that will be here, and we will enjoy being with them. We've been emphasizing today the subject of freedom and trying to emphasize appreciation on the part of all of us for the blessings and benefits that we have in this nation, and especially that we have in Henderson and Chester County. I want to do something that's maybe a bit unusual, but I'd just like to see, and in doing this, also express appreciation by this. I'd like for every person in the auditorium tonight who has served at one time or another in our armed forces to stand. Every person who served at one time or another in our armed forces to stand. Thank you. Thank you for standing, and thank you for what you have done to help keep the freedoms that we have. I would guess, if we were to take the time to analyze it, that we have people here tonight that would represent many of the different wars and conflicts that we have had. And we just want you to know that we appreciate you and believe that you're doing that, especially to help keep our nation as close to God as possible, is something that is important. Tonight, I want to, probably more in an informal way than usual, talk about the subject of church and state. We've talked about this being July the 4th, and that reminds us that there are things that we ought to think about as far as our nation's concerned. And Gary, I appreciate the two songs that we sang then. I think we pay tribute to God and also to those who have been a part of our nation in singing those. And then we've also talked about the fact that today is the Lord's Day and the significance of that in the coming of Christ and the establishment of the church. Our nation was begun because people were suffering religious persecution in other places. and came here especially to produce a setting where anybody would have the opportunity to honor God as he understood that he should do it. I hope that our nation continues to be based on that in general, although sometimes there are things that happen that make us wonder. I believe that we still have so many people who understand that, who believe in God. They may not be New Testament Christians, but at least believe in God, and that we should show respect to him even as a nation and recognize that he is involved in our being a nation. In the passage that Richard read a few minutes ago, a little more lengthy than usual, we have the best outline that I know anywhere in the Bible dealing with the subject of government. In fact, there are three basic ideas presented here. There's a prohibition, there's a promise, and there's a procedure. The prohibition is basically that God does not want each of us to take government into his own hands, and even repaying and punishment into his own hands. It's easy sometimes for us to think in terms like that of getting even with someone if we've been harmed or mistreated, and sometimes doing it outside the law of the land. God says, don't repay or recompense to no man evil for evil. Don't you take the government into your own hand. Don't you take the punishment into your own hand. And then he gives a promise. He says, I will repay. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Here is a promise from God that he has everything in his hands, that he has everything in control, and that he's going to see that those who deserve to be punished will eventually be punished. I was talking to someone the other day about life in general, and I made a statement somewhat jokingly, but I guess there's a truth on the part of most of us. I made the statement that I really believe that God will take care of everything, but sometimes I wish he'd hurry up a little bit. Our faith sometimes is not as strong as it needs to be. Our faith in God, and especially our patience associated with that, is not what it needs to be many times. But God has promised in the same book where he promises heaven that he will repay and he will take care of these things. In his own due time, in his own way, he said, I will repay. And then in the first seven verses of the 13th chapter, he sort of gives us the procedure. Maybe not in as much detail as we would like, but he says, the way I'm going to handle this is through the rulers of the nations. For they are my ministers, God would be saying. And I'm going to handle this situation through them. Don't you take the government into your own hand. I'll take care of it. And the way I'm going to take care of it is through those who are the leaders and those who are involved as the leaders of the nations and different parts of people throughout the world. And in these seven verses, he tells us a little bit about the powers that be, the respect and relationship that we're to have for them and to them, and the support that we are to give. All of this is treated here in these verses. There was a time in some nations at least, and it exists today in some, where the religion and government were one and the same. There are places existing today where by being a member of the government, you're also a member of a religion, or being a member of the religion, you're a member of the government. And even if not to that extent, there's a religion that has become the religion of the government, to where the church, as we think of it in general, and the state in general, would be connected. And in many instances, what is decided religiously is decided by those who are involved in government. That's not the case in the United States, and I'm thankful that it's not. I want you to notice, first of all, in what is said here, that there is a line of authority that comes to those who are the rulers. And that line of authority does not come through religion. It comes directly from God. I think it is important for us to understand this. Think in terms of God being at the top of everything. And here on earth, we have the religious part, the church. God is in charge of the church. We have the family, the home. God is in charge of the family. We have the servant-master relationship, which probably would describe in our time the employer-employee and the teacher-student relationships. And God has placed authority with those that are rulers there. And then there is the government, and God is in authority there. He is in charge there, and he gives authority to those who are the leaders in government. God has given authority to Christ, for example, in the church to be the head of the church. He has given authority to the elders appointed in each local congregation to be the leaders in that congregation and to have the authority of leadership in that congregation. And that relationship to God comes directly through Christ to those who are the leaders. It's not based upon whether they are citizens of the country or not. It's not based upon the family, except that there are some qualifications that have to do with the family. It's not based upon what type of job they have, whether one is an employer or an employee. There might be a case where an employer who has the authority over his employee is serving with that same employee as elders in the church. You see, the authority in the church does not come through either of these other authorities. Same thing is true in the home, and this is a subject for another time, but maybe we need to be reminded of it. I think sometimes we determine or try to determine what's right and wrong relative to marriage, divorce, and remarriage in the family based upon whether or not people are Christians. But the family was in existence long before people were Christians. God recognized marriage long before the church came into existence. And in reality, in Ephesians 5, God is using the husband-wife relationship to show us the relationship between Christ and the church, not vice versa. And so God's laws concerning the family are from the authority of God that he has to the family. Same thing is true with the master-servant relationship. We're told to obey those and submit ourselves to and respect those who are in authority as masters on the job and school and things like that. If I'm working for somebody in a factory and my employer is not a Christian, he is still my employer and has authority over me, and I'm to respect him not because he's a Christian or not, but because he has the authority, the God-given authority that's given in that setting. And I say all of this to help us understand that that's the way it is with government. God has direct authority to those, direct relationship, and gives direct authority to those who are the rulers, which means that every ruler, whether a Christian or not, is subject to God and is called here a minister of God. I admit to you that it is a bit difficult for me to think of men like Saddam Hussein, for example, as being a minister of God. And yet he was when he was in authority. Just like Nebuchadnezzar was a minister of God back years ago. Just like the Herods were ministers of God in the time of Christ. They were not ministers connected to the church. In fact, some of these had little or no religion. Some of them had little or no belief in God. And yet they were ministers of God in that God is in charge and God can use each one of them as he chooses and as he sees fit. And sometimes in hindsight, we can look back and see, in Bible times particularly, where God did use those who were certainly not God-fearing people, maybe didn't even believe in God, to further his own cause. He raised up people, Cyrus, for example, who evidently did believe in God to some extent, but was not associated with God's people. He raised up Cyrus to be involved in the deliverance of God's people. And so we need to understand that everyone who is a ruler, who is in charge as a leader in government, is a minister of God. Whether you like President Bush or not, he is God's minister in our country at this time. And whoever is elected in the next election will be the ruler of this, or the leader of this country, and will be a minister of God. whether or not you like the governor of our state. There is a sense in which he is a minister of God. And every person, even on a local level, is a minister of God in that there is no power that is except it be from God. And so the first thing I want us to understand is that there is a line of authority, not through the church, not through the family, not through the workplace, but directly from God to everyone who is in a leadership role as far as government is concerned. In the second place, as far as our nation is concerned, it seems to me to be important that we understand in the study of those documents that were signed and documents developed over 200 years ago, that it was the intention of our forefathers for us to have freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. And I'm of the opinion that there are many today who are approaching it as if our Constitution said we were to have freedom from religion. There are those who do not want the word God in specific places. You're well aware of what's been going on in the debate relative to the Pledge of Allegiance, whether to have the words under God. You're aware that in many instances there are those who want to take the name of God, the idea of God, out of our schools and out of other places. And in many instances they will say that to promote the idea of God is a violation of our Constitution. I do not believe that is the case. When you look at what happened with those who came and began the nation as we know it today, you're looking at people who believed in God very strongly. And when you study all of those who have been president down through the years, almost without exception, we have quotes from them that emphasize how important it is to rely on God as a nation. They may be Christians, they may claim to be Christians, or they may not be. But all of them have realized that this nation is dependent upon the God of heaven if we're going to be the nation that we ought to be. And so we need to make a distinction between freedom of religion, which means that everyone ought to have the choice to worship God or not worship God, and if he worships God, to worship him as he understands to be the right way. That's what's been a part of our nation. And when we get away from that, we're going to lose a lot of things. And I think it is time for us to be concerned. In connection with that, that we need freedom of religion, not freedom from religion, we also need to recognize that there is a difference in having the opportunity to do something and being forced to do something. I'm thankful, for example, that we do not force prayer upon people in the schools or anywhere else. I'm thankful that we do not force the reading of the Bible. I would not want a child of mine to be forced to read from the Quran or to pray through Muhammad or to be involved in worship to Buddha. And by the way, there's an interesting article in the paper today relative to a new Bible that's coming out. If you haven't read it in the Jackson Sun, you may want to do that. But we need to emphasize the importance of being allowed to. I would not want to force anybody to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag with the words under God if it violates their thinking. I think everyone ought to have the same freedom that I do. But being allowed to pray, being allowed to read God's Word, being allowed to have the Pledge of Allegiance and to emphasize God in that is, I believe, a part of the freedoms that we enjoy. We need to be careful that we don't try to take this too far. I think sometimes in the discussions that we have had concerning prayer in school and things related to that, that we've almost allowed ourselves to come to the point, maybe subconsciously, of believing that everybody ought to do this and we ought to really have this rule in our schools and everybody ought to be forced to do it. No, not so. The very freedom that we have in this nation is a freedom of religion. And I hope we never get away from that. If I know a person with whom I disagree almost 100% as far as religion is concerned, I believe that person, if he is honest in his approach, has the same right to worship as he believes is right as I do. Now, God is the one who knows who's right and who's not. God will be the final judge. But we need to realize that we ought never to do anything that would force or try to force religion on anyone. But I do believe that we need to work in every way that we can to try to have laws passed that will allow anybody in this nation the freedom of religion. Another thing that is mentioned and indicated in this passage has to do with the support of the government. I guess we fuss about taxes about as much as anything. And I think it's right for us to be concerned because there are a lot of things happening. I find myself concerned with what appears to be waste in many instances and other concerns associated with that. But if I understand the Bible in this passage and in other passages, as citizens, we have the responsibility to support our government. Jesus taught that. He taught Peter to go and, in one case, he had a miraculous event where they got the money out of the fish's mouth. And if we had that today, there'd be more of us fishermen. But Jesus emphasized that we're to render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's and unto God that which is God's. Sometimes we talk about things that violate our conscience. I know for a while, at least, there were many of the preachers who opted out of Social Security. And if I understood the statement that was signed as a violation of one's conscience. But I noticed that they had no trouble with the idea of the government providing protection or provisions or leadership. And if I'm going to expect protection and provisions, especially from the government, I also have the responsibility to support it. That doesn't necessarily mean that I will agree with everything that is done by our government. I don't. There are some things for which tax dollars go that I think are not good. Maybe some that would even violate the will of God. But remember, God's authority is from him to these rulers and not through me to those rulers. And so I don't need to spend all of my time trying to decide whether each penny is spent in the right way by our government, but to support the government as a citizen and leave the leadership up to those who are in authority. We do, rightly so, have the right of changing those who are in leadership. We even have the right of changing laws, and we have amended our Constitution many times, and there may be more amendments, and there may be some that I'd really like to see. But I still have the responsibility to support those that are in authority. That's what he's saying here, especially in verses 5 through 7. And what Jesus indicated in talking about rendering unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And Paul especially emphasized that there is another way in which we are to support the government. He said he would that prayer be made for those that are in authority in 1 Timothy chapter 2. And so in addition to the financial support that we have as an obligation as citizens, because we are Christians and believe that God is in the leadership role and believe that he can change things through these that are his ministers, we need to pray for them. Sometimes I don't know exactly that for which we should pray. Someone in the audience tonight asked me this morning exactly what we should pray for when we're praying for our enemies. Especially if that enemy is an enemy of God. Would there be a time that we would ever pray that maybe that enemy ceased to exist? I think if we do, we only pray that in it being the will of God, or if it be the will of God. I'm not smart enough many times, even when we're dealing with sickness and the possibility of death, to know the specifics for which we're to pray. And it becomes more and more involved in recognizing that God's will is to be involved. But I do know that we are to pray for those that are in authority, whether we agree with or not. We're to pray for the leadership. I don't think I can remember there ever being a president during my lifetime with whom I agreed on everything. I think I would have to admit that I think all of them have done some things that were not best for our country. Some of them I like better than others. Some of the programs I like better than others. But I do believe that I have an obligation to have a sense of respect and to have an attitude of prayer in praying for those who are involved. We might also raise the question about to what extent should we be personally involved. There have been those in the church down through the years who thought that a Christian could not participate in civil government. I respect their right to believe that, although I believe them to be wrong. I believe passages like this show us that we do need to be involved in civil government. And perhaps one of the reasons that we have as many problems, that seem to be problems to us at least, as we have today, is because there's been a tendency, especially in the last few generations, for those who are the best people and those who may be the closest to God not to get involved, even to the extent of voting, and allow decisions to be made by the minority, with the silent majority sometimes not being involved. Based upon the Word of God, I would suggest that every one of us has the right to vote and maybe even the responsibility to vote. And I'll also suggest this: you and I do not have the right to complain about anybody who's elected when we didn't even participate. And sometimes those who complain the loudest are those who would never get up and go to vote. Somehow or other, we've got to bring this silent majority, and I believe that there is still a majority of people in the United States who believe in God, who are godly in that sense at least, and who believe in doing what is right. And we could control a lot of things if we could bring people to get involved. I also would encourage good people to hold office. I know there are a lot of difficulties associated with it, and I know sometimes it is difficult to make the decisions that have to be made and be the Christian that one ought to be. My father was county judge 3 terms, and I remember some of the wrestling that he did with decisions that he tried to make. And I realize that there can be problems. It's not easy. But folks, we need to get people involved who will wrestle with those problems, trying to use God's help and not trying to get away from Him. And then all of us need to also recognize that as far as the government is concerned, we ought to obey the laws of the land. There are some laws that I don't like. There are some speed laws that I think are ridiculous. I don't see why they have them. But they did not ask me when they posted that speed limit. And I have an obligation to respect that speed limit whether or not I like it. There are other laws that have been passed that I really don't like. But I have the responsibility to respect those laws as a citizen of this nation, and so do you. We need to obey the law of the land. The only time that we would not have the responsibility to obey the law of the land is if there's a higher law from God. As indicated in Acts 5:29, we ought to obey God rather than men. And if the law of the land required us to do something that was a violation of God's will, we would have to take God's will into consideration. But as I indicated this morning, I don't believe the problems with our laws today, at least where we are at this point, force us to do anything that's anti-Christian. They allow us many times to do things that violate the will of God. But I believe you and I can still live Christian lives and respect the laws that are on the books, the laws that have been passed. And we need to get involved in the community to the extent that we can. Sometimes this is a fine line. This has been a very, very difficult point for me in living in Henderson, Tennessee. When I moved here, one of the things that was indicated and one of the things that I saw was a need to reach out into this community and not be thought in the church as though we were some snobbish group sitting over to the side and not willing to participate with anybody else. And yet in doing that, in reaching out to the community as a citizen, it is hard sometimes to make the distinction in the minds of many people between a citizen and a Christian. I believe that we can do anything in this community in cooperating with others and working with others as citizens of this community. It's one of the reasons that I've been involved as much as I have in the American Cancer Society Relay. I believe it is an excellent event and that I can participate in it as a citizen. But that is also the reason that I am not a member of the Ministerial Association. I could never be involved in a religious group whereby my involvement, I left the idea that there is no distinction between denominationalism and the church.